It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And welcome to the, the first 2025 edition of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan along with my friend Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all here and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and everybody out there listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's, in the news cycle out there, there's a lot of bad news, but in the woods, it's good news. It's January. It's happening here, whether you're a deer hunter, whether you're a duck hunter, the magic month is here.
That's right. The rut is getting ready to get started. Some people are saying that it is started. And
I'll be one of those people.
And that's typical. Usually between Christmas and New Year's, mm-hmm. you get some of that activity going on, rut starting to happen a little bit. And in about another week to 2 weeks, it's going to be really going on.
We talk about when peak, the different peak ruts, and we've played that show here recently,
right.
too. The peak ruts in Alabama, the bunch of different, from northwest Alabama to southwest Alabama and all between all these different ruts. But we'll talk about our area down here in southwest Alabama. And there's kind of two peaks here. We're going to talk about what happens in January and then what happens in February. But, you're talking about some people reporting it. There's also just individuals in the mix, and I see a combination. I have seen does that have yearlings with them and pay no attention to, and what I'm seeing right now are young bucks.
Right, right. That's typical. The young ones start
then,
first.
And then I've seen some does that will let them chase them a little bit, too. I saw something interesting on a hunt the other morning. Watched this on the way out. It was about 9:30 in the morning. I'm walking out. And long road there, and watch this doe come out, and then I pull my rifle up because I've had success over the years, during the rut, go ahead and get ready.
Right.
And I'm standing there with the rifle ready, and this, three-point cow horn thing, whatever, walks out, trots out behind her. She's running down the road away from me. I don't even think she saw me. He stops, and he sees me, and we did like a two-minute stare down, right, looking at me. This doe turns around and comes back to him and stands next to him.
That is strange.
He was chasing her, but then when he stopped chasing her, she turned around and came back like, hey, I'm here. You would chase me.
Quit looking around.
Yeah,
I'm right here.
Yeah, I'm right here. You could chase me. Definitely have seen, pre-rut behavior, a lot of, young bucks on their feet. If I have, I was going to tell you, told you this morning before you're doing the news, before we started the show, maybe I was just going to do a complaint thing.
Right.
I don't.
And you didn't say what the complaint was.
The complaint is, Mike, like the complaint so many people have. And for 5 years, the number of bucks that we've killed is very few, right? Very few bucks. There's been, a few younger bucks killed. I'm one of those people. I know it's not perfect management, but if I have a kid or something that hadn't killed a buck,
I don't care what they shoot.
Exactly. They say, what can my son shoot? I said, whatever he wants, or their daughter, whatever they want,
that's
legal. I don't. But that's been five deer like that, maybe.
Right.
Maybe four deer like that. The fact that I just don't see advancement. You talk about this, and now you're up in the Black Belt, and you see the same thing. Not daylight pictures, because daylight pictures, I got tons of young bucks, but just know I'm just not seeing. And I've got older age class. I've got deer, and that's what we do too with the grown-ups on my place. We don't shoot rack. It's not 8-point or better, 6-point or better. It's 5-year-old deer or better.
Right.
We go through look how short the legs look. Look at how the Roman nose. And I don't care if that deer's a 4-point. And I got a couple that are like a 4 and a 5-point that weigh, and we're in Mobile County, so y'all think about this: 175-pound 4-point.
Right.
I just don't know, and it's. There's so much to this, and I know that, you're in the land business, recreational land business. You can do a lot of management, but dirt plays a big part of it. And then I have neighbors, of course, that that have done really well, but they're feeding, protein feed at a very high level. I don't know. There's my complaint is, once again, if you want a 110-inch 8-point, I got them.
Right.
If you want a deer that's better than 120, I don't know where they are.
Yeah. But your neighbors are killing some.
My neighbor, but they're big feeding program.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that does make a difference. There's no doubt about it. But we've been joking about this forever.
But you see the same thing. Now, you're where the dirt's better,
but
the ag's not
there. I don't
have
any food. All we have is, you know, you got some clear cuts with some honeysuckle and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Some little greenbrier and that kind of stuff. But it's pine plantations.
Yeah.
You're not going to grow big deer, generally speaking, in pine plantations. You just don't.
Now, but I do put protein out there in the fact that we burn the woods a lot and the natural growth that comes back.
Right.
I got, you know. Yeah, I've got I could have 40-acre greenfield underneath the longleaf pines,
and that helps.
It does help, yeah. And my deer weights have definitely come up since. It's just I don't know. I'm just a frustration of every deer hunter that manages and lets them walk, and not every deer that gets to 5 years is going to be anything.
No,
but if you, I think we've talked about it. You and I've talked about it. We talked about it with Jay, a lot of it, Chuck Sykes. If you let all of them go, the hope is 30% of them may have the genetics to go that next level.
Right.
And it's, hey, maybe this complaint will be by next week. I'll be like, I was wrong. They showed up. But my gosh, it's just right now I got so much buck movement. And I'm not expecting the big bucks to be on their feet in the daytime right now, but even at night, not seeing them.
Well, me and my buddy Ken Airbetter, we've been hunting together and around each other for, 40 years or more. And we have been talking about that for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, we let them go this year, let them 120s, 130s go. Mm-hmm. They could be 140s, 150s, And I can't tell you how many deer that me and him have let go in the 130s to 140s. I'm telling you, a lot of them.
That is hard to do.
That next year they're going to be the 150s, 160s, or whatever. And the next year, it's the same thing. We see the 120s or 130s or 135s. Just let them go. And then, every now and then there'll be one that'll be a 140, mid-140s or something.
Because you're talking about a deer that's up in the upper 120s or 130. That deer, to me, has shown, all right, he has the ability to not be that five-year-old four-point. He has the ability to grow a rack.
Right.
He's that 30% of the deer that you let through, but then they don't go to the next level.
Where do they go after that? I can't tell you.
I
don't know. That's been a puzzling thing.
We
joke about it every year. Yeah, I'm seeing those same 4 points and 6 points and 8 points that I saw last year. The same ones. It's got to be the same ones. Where are they?
Are they
not growing? Or
were they maxed out and starting to come back down? The number of
not the ones I'm seeing, they're not.
Yeah, so then what happens? I don't know. Because mine's not. Let's bring the numbers back by 20 Boone and Crockett points for mine compared to what you're talking about.
But I'm talking about years ago. Now it is nothing like that. I mean, I barely have 100 class on my property. I think you probably got better class than I do up in Marengo County.
Nah, really?
Yes, absolutely.
See, but mine just they max out, and you're talking about the 4 points or 6 points. My 8 points outpace 2 to 1 any 4 points or 6 points.
Yeah.
I'll show you a picture. I mean, you have them and have a group of bucks there, and the majority of them are 8 points.
Yeah.
They're just the big ones, 110 inches.
Yeah.
The big ones, and every year letting 15 to 20 that are those 8 points. Let's say 15. I mean, maybe it seems like 20, but let's say 15 8 points. Or like you'd think,
even 10, you would think one or two
is going to screw up and get bigger.
Are going to be the 120, the 125.
And I'm not talking about killing them, y'all. But Mike's joked about it. It's true. I run a ton of cameras.
Oh yes, there's no joke.
Ton of cameras, so I'm watching. It's not like I'm just saying I got these two cameras and I'm guessing what I have there. And I run them year round.
Yeah.
I watch them year round. And it's just this, I don't know. It's this question. And then, yes, if I'm not here asking for 150s. I'm just wondering, occasionally, and, out where I am, there's been some pretty good deer killed, even not where the people are feeding, because we have peanut fields around us and those kind of things. But I still don't see, those people jumping to that next level. Now, are some deer 118s and stuff? Sure. But you would think the number of people and where we are that are not shooting little bucks,
right,
that we would see. I ain't asking for one. How about a 125?
Yeah.
I hope I'm jinxing myself in reverse so much that next week I come in and say boom, got him.
He showed up.
Yep.
Yeah, but there are some people out there, like you say, that are killing some decent deer.
Yeah,
no monsters.
Right.
Every now and then a really big one will show up. but they just far and few between.
Yeah.
Now, when you get up in the Black Belt,
sure,
and you have a lot of agriculture around, it's a whole different world.
Yes.
Whole different world. Everything changes, and the deer grow big. You know, they'll be the 200, 220 pound, 230, 40 mm-hmm. pound, even 250 pound deer, and the horns will be, you know, a lot of 125 to 135, 40 class, yep. and then they occasionally get up to 150 and occasionally get to 160 or so. But
you know, it was amazing.
You got to have the agriculture that.
You do to some degree, but I wonder if there wasn't a remnant of that. So, you know, I hunted west of where you hunt for many years.
Yes.
I hunted near Thomaston.
That's right.
Yeah. And we had pasture ground with, you know, hardwood heads going through it. We hunted in green fields there. There was some ag, but not where on our piece. They could have, I guess, walked across the road.
But around. There was, yes.
Then we had a section of property that we leased from Gulf States Paper Company.
Right.
That was the far northwest part, like far away from wherever the ag was.
Right.
Right. I mean, and you know, up there, early on, before people were trying to plant trees for their retirement, which you saw what happened with that. Everybody planted at the same time and tried to harvest at the same time.
That's what my problem is right now.
Yeah. That they're holding onto these trees because the prices aren't good. Because everybody planted at the same time with
That's
CRP.
Right.
But this was Gulf States before that, right? Before that, they had taken the ground that you could tell was not ag-friendly because it had some pitch and roll to it. That's why it was in timber back then. And now I was younger and hadn't seen as many things, but the number of deer that I didn't kill, saw mostly during bow season, that were giants.
Yeah.
That were giants.
Yeah.
And we were, and it was not... They were far enough away; they weren't getting to that ag down there to the southeast, and they were giant. And I don't know if that was remnants of days gone by.
A couple of things, Sean. There, back then, there wasn't a lot of deer. They were just starting to show up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first deer up around where you're talking about hunting, they showed up around 1970.
Yeah.
Okay, and you were hunting up there when?
Well, I would have been when I was so.
1990?
Yeah, I guess 90. Yeah, the old story was that got a scholarship at the University of Alabama, and Dad said, well, boy, you did good, whatever he said. So your mother and I will pay for you to be in a fraternity or a hunting camp. And Mike, you've known me a long time. What do you think my discussion was? I said, thank you, Mom and Dad. I will not be a pledge. I will be a pledge at a hunting camp and got to hunt some, you know, amazing places. But, yeah, so that's 20 years after they came in.
But... The other thing is, there was not that many people hunting up there at that time.
True.
They were just starting to start really, the word was getting out that, you know, that was big deer country up
mm-hmm.
there. I was hunting up there.
Yeah. Before me.
1977, 78.
And you tell those stories, too, that if y'all saw a deer or two over a weekend, that was.
The first time I started hunting up there was. I think it was 1977, I think, somewhere around it. We hunted up in Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother hunted all the way from the opening weekend all the way till after the first year, and he took a week off around Thanksgiving and hunted all that time. He never saw a deer till after the first year. Now, he ended up killing a real nice buck, but never saw a deer. And that's in Dayton.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and Thomaston was basically the same
thing. Yeah, not far from,
it was all the same thing back then. You didn't see many deer. But now, about 1982 or 3, started being more deer. But they were big back then,
they,
you know?
Yeah, so
but
I
there
just,
was agriculture all around up
there.
There
was, but I guess, and I'm getting real narrow here, right?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about big swaths. I'm talking about a very specific area that, you know, 5 miles to the southeast— They could have gone across the road and found some ag.
Yeah.
Even though what we hunted was, pasture ground with hardwood hedgerows. But this was the complete opposite end of the property to the north. It would have been, could the bucks have gone down there and migrated 8 miles or something like that? Yeah, sure, they could have.
Yeah.
But it was pine trees back then, Gulf State. But they were, and I think it must have been just fewer of them, more browse. Maybe the management was different on the pine trees, but... I had younger eyes. It was a kid that grew up hunting in Saraland. I was the kid that grew up hunting, you know, out off Celeste Road.
Yeah.
That then all of a sudden was in a different world. But it was just the number of deer that to me were, oh wow.
Yeah.
You know, back then. And this wasn't, I mean, there, like Mike said, this isn't, there's no high fence, this is no feeding programs, this is regular folks. We'd scratch the dirt and make a green field, you know, and we had, you know, stands and stuff, but just the number of, you know, good deer. One of the deer on my wall now is, you know, one of those deer that killed back then.
In like 1985 to 95, in that range, the deer just exploded up there.
Yeah, the number, you're right, because we went from.
The deer exploded up there.
Just you'd see 30 or 40 in an afternoon. Yeah,
there's just tons of deer up there, but they got big, but they were still agriculture. I mean, I hunted around a lot of agriculture. Up in Dayton, there was soybeans all around us. When I hunted in Thomaston,
oh, I was in
Catherine,
the right.
There if was you tons put a, of soybeans around,
100% agree. And if you put and if you put a 10 mile or 15 mile circle around where I hunted, there was ag there.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying in that corner of the woods
that you were
within 3 miles, it just wasn't there. Right. It was just weird. There are a bunch. We'll talk about this. Go to the break. Come back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on this New Year's edition of the show. George Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And so we can get off the complaint. I mean, we talk about it a little bit more on the complaint thing, but we got good news. I mean, the rut is here, and we got cold weather coming.
Yeah, really cold weather.
Yeah, so that's...
It's coming up week.
Yep, double good. You know, that's the thing that stinks is people took a lot of time off for the holidays maybe and don't have vacation. You should always hold some vacation back in your pocket if possible for weeks like this one coming up. And then it also
mid-January anyway.
Yeah.
If you love to deer hunt, I mean, mid-January is when you want to be there.
You know, we do talk about that, you know, with the change in the dates, you know, that had happened. I guess, has it been 6 years we've had that change? Maybe more? The February 10th? Maybe 5 years, let's say.
Yeah,
I think I feel
there.
Safe in saying it's been 5 years. Yeah. Of course, that's representing the fact that, well, it's funny because where I am, I just happen to have deer that rut like the black belt. You know, so mid-January is our best. But we get a secondary rut, too.
Yeah, that comes we do up the country, too.
But, you know, there's some people, like, you know, and I hunted western Washington County for a long time, and there might have been some activity, but it truly was that February rut there. Yeah. And there's so many other people out there, too. So, yeah, for some people, it might be take that time off mid-January. Some people, it might be take that first week in February off.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
Depending on where you are.
That's right.
So, you know, just... but it's a good time of year. You got some good weather coming up. You know, this time of year, too, depending on where you are, as you know, Mike and I talk about this every year, is if you do want to call, right, before the rut's wide open, to me, and you have way more experience over the years than me, but my success with grunting, even to some degree rattling, but I don't rattle much in Alabama. It's been years since I rattled, but grunting, I've had success now, not mid-January.
You're 100% right. Right now, week, 2 weeks, or so before the rut really gets cranked up is the time to rattle and grunt. Right now is the time.
So, yeah, if you've been waiting to do that, because once we get to the rut, I mean, it's not that it's not going to work during it, but, you know, they're truly chasing at that point. Although I told you, I've got a variety of things going on. Like everybody, we say, okay, here's the peak of the rut. Yeah, that's the peak. But if you ever look at like a bell curve, it's like people say, well, the duck migration. I said, well, duck migration starts – you know, early.
Right. Yeah.
And some are coming in at the very end or after season. We're talking about when the bulk come in.
But that's weather sensitive, too.
Yeah, it's weather and calendar. I mean, I don't want to go complete nerd, but there's certain ducks that migrate because of photo period, the length of day. That's why we'll call them calendar ducks. And you see a lot of them, you know, like in the marsh in Louisiana, or marsh here, gray ducks, gadwalls, right?
Right.
You're like, the weather didn't have to get great, and they showed up.
Yeah.
You know, pintails do that to some degree. Now, mallards, weather.
Right.
They got to have the weather. Even green-winged teal, to some degree, they do a little bit of both. Sometimes they show up just because the length of the day. Sometimes they take a big cold front with them. But, yeah, we'll get into some ducks later. But this, but you do see a mix. I see a mix of deer that are right on the edge, like the doe that came walking back to that cow horn 3-point thing to like, hey,
which
chase
is
me.
Unusual.
I mean, come. She yeah. made. A, she was down the road 30, 40 yards, and then turned and came back to him like, hey. Hey, remember when you were chasing
fun.
Me?
Come
remember
on.
When you were chasing me?
Yeah.
And then I got Doze with Yearland still with him. Doze and Pam ain't mind, you know. So it's a mix of things going on. Like
if you want to know when the rut really gets started, you start seeing the yearlings by themselves.
There you go.
And that's when the rut really gets kicked off. You start looking around in the green field,
yep.
and there's 8 or 10 yearlings out there, not a mature doe, then
yes.
you know things are starting to get kicked off.
I posted a picture, must have been 2 years ago, maybe on Instagram, that folks loved. It was I was easing up to a field, it was probably 2:30 or so, and I was like, I think there were a dozen yearlings, not a mature doe. And I took a picture, I said, you know, rut's on, and a bunch of people were like, absolutely. The field had not a maturity. It was nothing but biddies out there. And I said, well, this tells me everything I need. No, I was excited getting in the stand that day because of that. So, you know, it's some things to watch there. Also, you know, right now calling is good. Where do you sit this time of year? Are you sitting, are you still in a kind of a thicker area? Or are you getting where you can see? I mean, we're not talking, this is not mid-January. This is our first show of January. So right now, where do you sit?
Well, we mainly hunt in green fields now. I don't have a lot of – I've only got 350 acres, and the way that my place is set up, it's just not set up real good for hunting in the woods because you're going to be around a green field. So we basically hunting in the green fields more than anything else now, Sean.
Okay.
And that didn't used to be the
way
for me.
But to put yourself on a different piece of property.
Yeah.
Would you be – if you had some bottoms or you had some thickets, would you be hunting those right now, or would you be on the green field?
I'd be hunting scrape lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I had a different piece of property than what I got now, I'd be hunting some scrape lines.
You know, which is interesting, too.
In the bottoms.
Yeah.
If you had some good bottoms, absolutely.
Yeah, hunting the scrape line is interesting, too, because a good buddy of mine that hunts with me, he and I grew up hunting together, and we had those big rainstorms. And he lives over in Louisiana, and he had texted me and said, I'll be there in the morning. And because, I mean, he and I grew up hunting, you know, in Saraland, and then grew up hunting in the river swamp of the management area and all those places.
Right.
So we're scrape line hunters like that. And we always knew that after the rain washed them, the bucks were lined up to go rework them.
Refresh them.
And so he's driving from Louisiana over because he was so excited about the fact that we had the big rain. He said, because they'd been scraping some pretty good scrapes on our place. And he said, I can't wait to get there. I don't know which scrape line to go to, but I'm going to one of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as I get in there. I mean, it's funny. You know, we talk about how quickly they get back in after a rain.
They do.
You know, and right now, in another week or two, they once it gets going, they don't maintain the scrapes at all. But right now, they're still maintaining scrapes on our place.
Yeah. Well, some of them still will maintain them.
If they're going, yes.
Yeah,
you
some
just
of
see,
them will.
And, you know, you see that, too. All scrapes are not created equal.
Yeah.
You can go through the woods and look, and there's kind of the, might as well make a scrape. And then there's the scrape.
That's right.
You know, and it's funny how many different bucks use a scrape. I was on one of the hunts here. That I was on lately, and I hadn't got into this on the show, but I've been real ill, and so I really until like 4 days ago had not hunted at all.
Yeah, you have been really sick.
Yeah, I've been sick to where I just didn't have the energy to do it. Back at it now, and I ain't lost a step. It's as soon as that's how sick I was. So I told people I hadn't hunted. They said, "My God!" And I said, "Yeah, that's sick."
Yeah.
As soon as I got to feeling better, though, you know, getting on it and seeing that the watching a scrape the other day. I saw 4 different bucks work the same scrape within 30 minutes.
Yeah.
One come in, work a scrape, go on down the road, and then you hear, next. These are smaller bucks. And then
right.
You think, can you smell how your buddy's just been there? Is it like dogs peeing over where one dog will pee, and then the other dog,
male dog's got to come check it out. That's right.
But they got to mark over it. You know, wonder how much of that's going on, too. Not just checking for does, but eliminating or trying to cover up the scent of the buck that was there before them.
Yeah. You know, used to, for several years, we thought that just one buck made that scrape.
Yeah.
Didn't
absolutely.
Know that,
I grew up thinking that was that buck's. Hallelujah.
One buck.
Yep.
You know,
that was his scrape line.
That was his scrape line. No other bucks came in there. But
then you start watching it.
Yeah. Then we found out that that's not true. There might be, if you in a place where there's a lot of bucks and a lot of deer, there might be 10 come through there in a day.
Yep.
Put a camera on it and see what happens.
Yeah, because, I mean, I used to think, okay, well, so the buck makes, you know, when I was young, that's that buck's scrape line, then the does are going to visit it, and then he's going to smell that and figure out which doe. And they're coming in there checking for does, but what we're talking about right now is I think a lot of the behavior, too, is, oh, yeah, You just marked it. You speak. Guess what? I'm gonna cover you up. I mean, like I said, let male dogs out in the yard.
That's right.
One dog goes and pees on something. Next dog, he's gonna go pee on. I'm gonna cover you up. Cover you up.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you just bring a dog in a yard where a dog has been.
And they got to pee on everything.
They're going to pee on every place that dog has peed.
100%.
I mean, you think, how much pee is in that dog's bladder? He's peed 15 times since we've been here.
But I think that's exactly what's going on with those bucks, too.
Yeah.
Is obviously, they're going to check if there's a dose in it. But while they're there, I'm going to cover up your pee.
That's right.
With mine.
Yeah.
So
that's why a good scrape line, if you got a really good scrape line, that's why it's good, because the bucks are going to come through there sometime during the day and check the scrapes.
Yes.
Yeah. So that it's excellent to hunt scrapes this time of year.
But like I said, you're going to have to judge it too, because not all scrapes are created equal. And you got into saying that they'll maintain them toward the rut. They do, but they seem to drop, like, at least what I've seen over the years, like there's major scrapes and then there's kind of like, oh, I'll just make a little scrape here.
Yeah.
Because there happens to be a holly bush here, or something like that. Those seem to not be worked as much. Because, I mean, they scrape early in season, bow season. They do territorial scrapes, to mark out. But they seem to, I don't know, they get to these bigger scrapes. And that's the other thing, too. We used to say, big scrape has got to be a big buck. Well, is it? Or is it the fact that you got seven different bucks working
that
scrape and expanded it?
That's right. And I have seen some scrapes that is twice as big around as the hood of your car, truck.
Wow.
I mean, some big ones in there. Yeah, and that's what it is. It's just
because everybody's working it.
Everybody's working it.
But I grew up thinking the size of the scrape, he's a big buck because the scrape's big.
Well, me too. That's what we all thought.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is they just, one uses it. And then if you got a lot of bucks around, they all coming through there, and they saying, well, I'm really mad now because my two buddies has already come through.
That's right. I'm going to cover them up.
And he just makes it bigger and bigger.
Yes.
But I have seen several, I mean, really big scrapes. Well, most of the time you go through the woods and you see a little scrape. It's, maybe 2 foot in diameter or something, 3 foot or something. But I've seen some really big ones in the woods.
So when you're hunting a scrape, not all scrapes are created equal. Kind of find those ones that are, big time.
Multiple ones, too. Yeah. If you're going through the woods, you see one here, and you go down just a little bit further, there's another one there, and a rub, and, another scrape, and another rub, and, that's where you want to be this time of year.
So do that, and then, of course, won't be long, depending on where you are. We'll be in some more wide-open rut, and, for me in the rut, I'll tell you what, run the news, come back, I'm going to pick that up, kind of where we go, like where you're hunting right now. And then where are you going to be hunting in 2 weeks? And is it the same? We'll do that when we come back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. Before we get back into, deer hunting in the rut, my mind, where my mind stays.
Yeah.
That's on turkeys. And I got to hunt on New Year's Day, first day of the year, turkeys gobbling.
That's fun.
Gobble. And I don't know if it's turkeys or turkeys. It sounded like two different gobblers. I'm not sure. I think I heard a total of four gobbles. But sitting there, daylight breaks, I'm looking through some thin long leaves looking for deer, and I hear, I turn around to see the land, heck with the deer, and we'll listen to these turkeys fire off.
It's funny how that is. Some places, towards the end of deer season, January,
February.
Yeah, definitely. If you're out there right at daylight, you generally will hear one. In some places, like we was up in Kansas, and every morning you'd hear turkeys gobbling up there. Now this is in the fall.
Do you think they do it there to gather up because it's more open country or something? I don't know.
I don't know. They were in big hardwoods. I don't know.
But you wonder if that's a habit thing for them gathering up, because when it's a crazy thing. It obviously is important for the species to go ahead for turkeys to gobble, but it's not the best defense mechanism to make noise.
No, it's not.
I mean, you look at what, why critters are successful and live. The camouflage, a fawn that doesn't smell, for its first week, doesn't have any scent, so the predator can't find it.
Right.
You notice in the duck world, the hens are drab colored, so they can't be seen on a nest. You know, there's things that God put out there that help critters survive. It must be so important for turkeys to gobble to show who's boss and pass on the best genetics that they got to get in the middle of the woods and go, hey, I'm right here.
Yeah.
Hey, coyotes, bobcats, I'm right here. And I'm not even going to, you know, once spring comes and they're strutting, I'm here and I'm not even paying attention.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how the good part of that genetic code has to be, because the negative in it is, you know, I mean, can you imagine, like, well, elk will be, but think if whitetails went through the woods grunting as loud as the elk bugled all day long.
Yeah.
There'd be a lot more of them dead.
That's right.
You know, it's just funny to think about that. But, yeah, so I got my first gobbles of 2025.
Well, you know, people that have gotten some wild turkeys and raised them,
mm-hmm.
they gobble every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Because they don't have to fear, I guess.
I guess. They just gobble like crazy all day long every day. So I don't know, Midwest, I don't know what, if that has anything, maybe they're not food with as much. I don't know, but there's more predators out there than any place I ever seen in my life. So I don't know,
but I wonder if they can get away with it, because I know they were in the hardwood bottom. It's not like Kansas has no trees. Y'all spent time out there. There's eastern plenty Kansas has got forest, and they got all kind of hedgerows and all that. But they do have more open ground, too,
yes.
that you can get away. If you're standing in ankle-deep grass in amongst a 200-acre field, you can get away with gobbling because you can see that thing coming.
Yeah.
Where if you're next to a privet thicket on a sand road in Alabama, stuff can get up on you.
Yeah. I don't know. But, different places they gobble different.
All right. We also mentioned, right now you're talking about hunting scrapes. We can say that the next transition from that, for me, once that rut gets going, is where can I see them?
Yeah.
And that means does. Where are they moving, and where can I see the most number of places? Like, almost the flip side, you've been hunting bucks in thickets and all these kind of away places, and now for me, I switch gears, and power lines, roads, open big fields, if you can get them,
right.
That's kind of what I'm going to transition to.
And we always talk about hunting roads.
Yes.
I mean, that, of course, my place is a little different now than the places I used to hunt. And I don't hunt the roads like I used to, but that is one of the best places you could possibly hunt, especially during the rut. If you can get one, and you and we bring this up every year, you figured out how to kill them on the roads.
Yeah.
And that's put a red bucket on the road, a blue bucket, something out there for the deer just to stop and look and say, what is that?
Because y'all know what we're talking about, because you hunt a road and you're like, there's a buck. Let me get my rifle. Gone.
Yep, it's over with. But if you could just get him to come out on that road and just stop and look and say, what in the world?
We should market. I say this every year. I should market this and like have an infomercial, the hunt deer hunter's secret. And then, the order now, specialty buckets. You could get anything. I mean, buckets what's been around, when I've used
rainbow
them.
Rainbow color.
Yeah. Put something there that wasn't there yesterday.
That's right.
And it's not like they're going to stop long enough. It's worked for me. They stop. And sometimes what'll happen.
I mean, it's a genius idea. I mean, I had roads for years and years and never even crossed my mind something like that. I can't tell you how many bucks I would have killed if I'd have had a bucket back in the day.
Now, and I've had, it's not 100% because I've had bucks that are behind a doe that didn't even look up,
even
check up.
Yeah, that's right.
But when you get that, I'm not talking about mouth open chasing, but you get that trotting behind those. A doe comes across the road, and sometimes she never even pays attention, but he steps in the road and he'll look left and right.
Right.
And that bucket, they stop, they looking, and it gives you enough time to get that rifle up, and make it. And, if you're doing what we talked about in the show too, that it's, I'm trying to shoot, we don't shoot points at my place, we shoot age, right? It gives you a second to check that deer and go, is he old enough? Is he old enough? To shoot them, and it's just, it works a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's the only negative to hunting the road is sometimes they just don't give you a long enough look.
Yeah.
To really say, okay, what was that I just saw? Was that a 10-point or right. about 8-point or, you know.
And the nice thing about
the
bucket. Was he
a shooter or was he not? You know, you just don't get that chance to look. Or, and especially if you're trying to do age.
Yes.
Age takes longer yes. to look at than the horns do.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, and there's some, you don't even check up. You see that buck, you know, he's not
that's
one
right.
you're going to shoot. And then the other age class that doesn't exist for some reason on my property is the one that there's no question.
Yeah.
Like you just say, okay, that's it. But it's that in between. And one thing, too, is. You know, you're usually, I'm thinking about a certain stand to hunt. And it was actually the stand that I was hunting the other day that doe came back to check on that buck. And I've got a thicket behind me. And I got a straight road. And I've got some burned but grown back longleaf pines, enough cover that they feel safe in it. But you can kind of pick them out. It's like a clear cut.
Yeah.
You can see them, not see them. But if they get across the road, you don't see them. It's a thicket. It gets them to stop and turn and look down the road. So now you got the side view when he stepped out, and he also get to look at width.
Yeah.
You know, when he looks down the road of the bucket.
Yep.
So.
I mean, it's a genius idea, I'm telling you.
And, you know, you could use it. I mean, yeah, a power line may be not as good because it's so much wider, and there's more, you know, more time there. You really don't need it. But, yeah, you know, I'm picturing one right now. I could show you a picture of it. It's a sandy two-track, you know, road. And, if You and not just that you got to judge age class, but let's just say you're shooting anything. Often you don't have time to get your dang rifle up.
That's right.
And I know people like, you know, buddy of mine, you and I, both friend of mine that you know, always have your rifle up and always be down the scope. Well, you know, after 2 hours,
yeah, no, that's
I'm not Superman. No, I'm putting my rifle back.
That's not going to happen. You know, you get into real full rut and they really chasing those. They not stopping on that road.
No.
They not looking. They not stopping. They cross the road, jumping fences, whatever they do. They ain't stopping.
No, when that's what I'm saying. This is not mouth open chasing, yeah. But this is.
Yeah.
Everybody who hunts knows that you know.
Yeah.
You know where they're coming behind.
Following.
Doe come. Yeah, I guess that's the right term. Yeah. Following. That doe comes across, and you know within the next probably 2 minutes, you know, then you're gonna see that deer.
Yeah.
And that's when the blue bucket shines, or red bucket, or yellow bucket, or whatever you got, white bucket.
That's right.
You know what I should do? We got those FM talk. We got a few left, very few left. I got to reorder, but the buckets with the rope handles and the handle
on the bottom.
Yeah, our fancy buckets.
Yep.
The only radio station in the nation giving away buckets. That's what happens when
fine buckets.
What happens
when
they let a good old boy like me run a radio station?
Yeah.
I can imagine if I was at some radio seminar and they're saying, "What we're giving away, you know, these stickers, this and that. What are you giving away? Buckets?
Yeah.
What kind of redneck? Yeah, I'm that guy.
Yeah.
But I wonder. Yeah, we could do it. I could put the fancy FM talk 106.5 bucket in the road. Maybe I'll try that here this rut and. Try to shoot one and have bucket
well,
in the picture.
Color. It's red, white, blue.
Yep.
It's all different colors.
That's right.
Yeah.
And get their attention.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we would do that. That's our – we'll try to use the bucket with the logo on it and get a deer killed. So that's, you know, that kind of strategy there. And then, you know, in the morning I like roads like that. Afternoons, I got to tell you, it's – I mean, I know it's not particularly adventurous, but it's time to go to the biggest green field on the property for me.
That's right. Yeah, the does are coming in a lot of times, and the bucks are going to be following. But it's always the last 10 minutes of the hunt, too, most of the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Most of the time. Not
absolutely.
All the time, but most of the time.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other night on a hunt, too, a conversation. We'll have our buddy Jay Graddick back on the show here sometime this month. But we had a great conversation years ago with Jay about optics. We started off with rifles. You know, he said something important. If you can afford both, it's great. I mean, you were in the business of selling them for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was talking about some things that were really true. He said, with today's rifles, not all of them, but the majority of them, even lower cost rifles, they shoot just fine.
Absolutely.
They're accurate, you know.
Yeah.
They're accurate, right? You know what? I hunt with the Thompson.
I hunt with a $2,000 or $3,000 rifle.
I hunt with the Thompson Center. Most of the time, I got a
$400, $500 rifle.
That's what it is. I think it's that rifle that I hunt with most of the time is a Thompson Center Venture bolt action rifle. Action works great.
Yeah.
And it shoots just fine.
That's right.
I mean, could you get some $3,000 rifle that shot a tick better? Yeah. But this thing, I mean, when I'm shooting men of angle, I mean, it's in the bullseye.
Right.
If it happened to be on the edge of the bulls, it really doesn't matter deer hunting. And I remember y'all were talking about it. You said the optics is
way more important.
Way more important.
Yes.
So, I mean, people will sometimes spend all the money on the rifle because they heard this name and brand and all that stuff. And listen, you got the cash. They're great things. It works hard. But they're like, but I'm going to get, you know, got to skimp on the scope. Do the flip side. That's and this right. time of year really shows, you know, 50 millimeter bale at least, if not bigger, for drawing in light. And also that combination of how much light your scope brings in and how much your binoculars bring in, too. You know, which one do you want to be more powerful?
Well,
I want the scope to be more powerful so I don't get heartbroken.
Yeah.
So if I can see them through my binoculars, and I got good binoculars, but if I can see them through the binoculars, I can put the rifle up and still make a shot.
Well, you want both.
You yes.
know, if you're going to draw the most lights, you want a 56 millimeter scope and you want a 56 millimeter binoculars.
And I'll tell you something, too, on the binoculars thing, maybe not as important on a late afternoon rut hunt, but something I've done, I got some, you know, from going out west, I have 56s and they're pretty powerful. You'd be amazed if you're watching clear cuts or those kind of things, if you can stabilize those. And I have a tripod stand I can put in a shooting house, or if you're at a ladder or something, have the bar that's across, put them on something.
Yeah.
And you'll see more deer. If you're trying to scan and look, you know, you're hunting a power line or something, you hold them in your hands, you're still seeing a lot, but there's a shake you can't get out of your body that's in that shows up. If you can lay them on the edge of the shoot, on the lip of the shooting house, mash them down, it just, we think, oh, I'm steady. There's enough vibration you may not be able to notice that when you clamp them down, all of a sudden you're like, okay.
And that makes a lot more sense, especially if you got more power.
That's what I'm saying. When we talk about 56 millimeter bale and a 10 by.
Yeah, if it was a 6 power, it wouldn't be quite as important.
But I got 10s, I got a 15. 15 powers, yeah. So.
But when you start talking about 15 power and a 56 millimeter, you're not going to draw as much light.
Right.
As you will with an 8 and a 56 millimeter is the perfect matchup combo for gathering light. And, you know, if you got a 3-12 56 millimeter scope, that's between 6 power and 8 power is where you're going to draw
is that,
the most
is that
light.
The, I never knew that. Is that the sweet spot?
Yes.
Because I've always felt like backing
you're
it
get
off.
The power and you're going to get the light. That's the maximum of both that you'll get. You turn it up to 12, you're going to peek out the light, and you're not going to draw as much light.
Well, and at three,
you're drawing good light, but you're not getting the distance. You're not being able to see. So the 6 power to 8 power is the sweet spot on
that's the 35 miles an hour, although that's probably changed. Remember growing up, I was told the peak efficiency for probably my parents trying to keep me driving slowly. They're like, your best gas efficiency is at 35 miles an hour. That's what I was told back then. Now I think about it, they were just trying to get me to slow down. All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you here on the first show of 2025. We're talking some deer hunting. Do want to mention with the cold weather coming in, finally, this next week, maybe good news on the duck hunting front.
Yep.
The people have been doing okay, I think, around here in South Alabama. It's not been great. It hadn't been great in 15 years. But people doing okay. Louisiana, they're complaining but that it's not as good. But I've seen a lot of good people killing good ducks down there, too.
Yeah, though. I had some friends that went over there last week and killed them.
Yeah.
Did really good over there.
So, I mean,
I guess it's site-specific, too. It depends on where you go.
And
you
that's
a really good place, you know.
And, here it's funny, just on the wood duck front, which a lot of us said, to see what happened with those rains.
Yeah.
So the rains filled up a lot more places. Now the river swamp's coming up, too. But where you had ducks, you got about a third of those ducks because they're spread out, on the wood duck front. I think this is going to be one of those pushes that's going to be strong enough. We're going to see if we're going to get the ducks or not this year.
A lot of the lakes and ponds and stuff are frozen up in the north and northwest.
Yep.
So unless they...
We need them frozen in Kentucky and Tennessee and North Alabama here is what we need.
Yeah.
Get those frozen. And once again, it doesn't mean that those ducks would push the whole way to the coast, but sometimes they do.
Yeah.
And so hopefully... Yeah, and by the way, too, if you're having a good duck season or bad duck, whatever, give us a line over on the Facebook page. Let us know what you're doing. Facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. But, yeah, hopefully we'll get, we'll try to get Seth Maddox on. He's the waterfowl coordinator for the state.
Right.
Try to get him on next week. Get a little update because they do the flyovers and the counts and all those kind of things.
Right.
So I'm interested, we got ducks and we got another month of it here.
If you got a really good duck hole, call Sean.
Yes.
Please call
Sean. I'm very, very interested in it.
Yeah. Text him and call him.
Yes. You do drop me a pin where the place
and
is.
He will come hunt with you.
Yeah, it's
and have you on the show, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
If he has a good hunt.
Yeah, if I have a good hunt. Now, it's an interesting thing, too, that, you know, you being in the recreational land business, too, there's this, and something I'm looking at, and I'm not going to get specific to all the areas here, but Central Alabama Black Belt is producing some pretty good duck hunts. I think it's one of the things, as we look at the overall reason we don't get the ducks down here like we used to, and I argued it for years. We had too much pressure for too many years, that things changed out there. And then ducks not making it down to the south anymore, because of people managing to our north, like right. in whether it be Missouri or be in Kentucky or people have flooded corn and all those kind of things. I'm not talking about just like people say, oh, it's the government doing it. Private clubs are doing it like crazy.
That's right.
The ducks that used to pass through, they're holding them as well. There's some places I've seen got lucky enough
people,
to
more people duck hunting than it used to be. Way more.
And they're more serious about it, whether it be somebody with a $20,000 mud motor rig down here or guys up in the Tennessee Valley in North Alabama. I've gotten to see some of these places that are managing at a level. There used to be, there are always duck clubs up there and people flooding corn, but there's way more people that are doing it now. Right. And ducks that used to just pass through there for a day or two are staying. But I was thinking also the Black Belt that's produced some great hunts, there's more people managing that. There's more things in between Mobile, Alabama and Canada to stop a duck than there used to be.
No question about it. There's just way more people that are hunting ducks.
Yeah, and spending the money to try to make it better.
Well, there's a lot of people that are, that sell duck hunts.
Sure.
And they make a living off of that. And a lot of them now, where it didn't used to be any, or very few back years ago.
Yeah.
Up in that area anyway.
And you talk about
it. I mean, Arkansas has always been,
right.
Promoted
yes.
duck hunting, but north of us,
yeah,
it really hasn't been.
I mean, there are some old clubs. I live this stuff. There are some older clubs in the Tennessee Valley, up talking about Huntsville, Decatur, Stevenson, those areas that have been there for a long time from the 50s. But now people have, and so there's so many things above there too that they're complaining. But let's talk about them. There's I don't know the number 100 times more clubs up there right now that are holding water and holding ducks, and you talking about price per acre? You're in the recreational land. Have you price what even Alabama, the few clubs that come for sale up there along the Tennessee River?
Yep.
What those acres are worth?
Yeah.
It's
expensive.
Yeah, big time. And that's because because ducks are fun. All right, we'll do it all again next week, and hopefully y'all will have some good hunts over the weekend here and next week during the cold, and we'll talk about them and get your pictures. Come in the Facebook page, or you want to text them in to 343-0106. We'll talk about those on next week's show. For Mike Ward, Sean Sullivan, for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, y'all have a great one.